Yes, hello and welcome to a special Halloween podcast from The Rocking Vicar. This is 8 horror movies to see before you die. I'm Magnus Shaw and we're going to be exploring the films with the greatest capacity to unnerve, chill, terrify and occasionally amuse from more than half a century of cinema. But to do that, we're going to need an expert. And fortunately, I have one right here, direct from her ruined castle deep in the Transylvanian foothills. It's Rona Martin.
Hello.
Rona, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm feeling very spooky indeed, Magnus.
I know, here we are on Halloween. It's the time of the year when the veil between the two worlds is at its thinnest, they say.
Indeed it is. Mm. Well, it always is where I live, but, for the rest of you, it's only once
a year.
What
a brilliant answer. Yes, excellent. So, Rona, yes, here we are. And what could be a better time to nail this burning question? What are the 8 best horror movies, or at least the ones everyone should see before they die? We've chosen 4 each, and we'll get into those in a moment. But let me just ask you first how you went about making your choices, Rona. What were the key criteria you were looking for?
Oh, it was such a lengthy and clubs clinical. No, it wasn't. It was a random stab in the dark. Okay. So many films that I could have chosen. You know, how do you narrow it down? It was so difficult.
Yeah,
but,
really.
You know, and I think I probably drove you nuts, you know, chopping and changing my mind.
I got several lists on the email, let's put it this way. And
don't be telling everybody.
Just as I'd lined up one list, I thought, oh, yeah, that's a good selection. Another one arrived. But, you know, you've got to be fastidious about these things. These things matter.
And I'm not good with choice.
You
know, it's the horror genre has many avenues, and some are, you know, downright horrifying. Mm. And oh my God, you know, you just don't want to see it. You know, stuff I could have watched years ago, but really definitely couldn't watch now. The sort of cozy comfort of the Hammer type films, to the somewhat edgier ones, to the more modern ones.
People talk about a horror film. You say, should we put a horror film on? A lot of people, I think, have an idea of what they're going to see, but they can't have, can they, really? Not an accurate idea, because the genre embraces so many different styles and themes and approaches and techniques. And that's the beauty, I think, of the horror
films. Yeah, you can't possibly nail it down. You know, it's like, let's watch a comedy. Well, you know, Lenny Bruce was a comedian, as was Joe Pasquale. So
yeah, that's absolutely, yes, good comparison. Yes, that's absolutely true. It's a rich vein to be mined. And let's get started then, I think. Ever the gent, I will ask you to choose first. And where are we going?
Well, my first choice is a Hammer film starring Joan Fontaine. And it begins at a mission school in Africa and then moves to a bucolic village somewhere in sleepy England, where right from the start, all is not right. A fake vicar, can you imagine? Inbreeding, ugh, yikes. From 1966, it's The Witches.
Linda's grandmother's cruel to her. Now, did Linda tell you that?
I saw it.
You saw what?
They were in the wash house. She thought I'd gone. I looked. She stuck Linda's hand in the rollers and turned the handle.
What?
She put Linda's hand in the mangle.
Yes, as Rona says, The Witches from 1966, a Hammer film, sort of mid-period Hammer. What's so wonderful then about The Witches for you, Rona?
Does your mum still have boxes of toys and books from your childhood?
Well, you know what? My mum is famously unsentimental, so I assumed she had chucked the lot many years ago. But just the other Sunday lunchtime, she revealed that, yeah, there was a box of my very early toys still in the loft.
I wonder what was in them. Well, it just so happens that I found stuff in my dad's loft a few years ago, you know, moth nibbled bears and Cindy dolls that, oh God, you know, without even knowing who she was, had somehow transformed into Sue Cat women lookalikes.
Oh really? What a brilliant cool thing to do, to turn Cindy into a punkette. That's a wonderful idea.
There was all these Cindys and their hair has been sort of randomly pulled out or hacked away with the bluntest of nail scissors.
Of course, these days you'd be sent to a child psychologist immediately.
That's exactly
wouldn't
where
you,
I should have been, Magnus. But anyway, they didn't think about doing things like that back then. I wouldn't have been probably doing horror film podcasts had I done that. So, you know, perfect little Sue Cat women lookalikes. So they're blonde hair, dyed all different colours. And yes, so yeah, Dad's findings in the loft. Yeah, there was also a few classic children's books, but you know, the one book I always wished I owned but didn't because it was never written was the Ladybird Book of Witchcraft. Oh, it would have been very good. But seeing this film aged 9 or so more than made up for it. Every scene, it's just got that wonderful, sleepy, happy, bucolic feel about it, where all the happy little children go to school and they all wear lovely hand-knitted jumpers and so on and so forth. Yeah, it's a cool film, and the more I watch it, the more I enjoy it. It's got this underlying sinister sort of, besides the tweeness, which kind of offsets it. A film it must have influenced The League of Gentlemen. There's the butcher who looks so shifty. His name is Bob Curd, and best name. I mean, it's a comedy name, isn't it? marvelous, sort of very reminiscent of Hilary Bruce, the butcher of Royston Vasey. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And of course, Mark Gatiss from League of Gentlemen, an absolute connoisseur of the horror film.
I would so love it to have a good old blather about horror films with him. He knows his stuff as well. His series, or was it one-off, I can't remember, Horror Europa. It was on again on BBC4 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Check out iPlayer and see if it's still there. So yeah, go find it. But first, before that, watch The Witches, because it's a bit of a laugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful example of that very British tradition of rural horror, isn't it? The fear that something may be lurking in the greenery of the English countryside is something that's been played upon many times in horror films, of course in British horror films, and it works wonderfully well, because I guess the most shocking horror, or the most surprising horror, is that leaps out of an environment that seems so placid and so tranquil, and many a film has made a virtue of that. So that's Rona's first choice, The Witches from 1966. Now my first pick has almost become shorthand for the very idea of a horror movie. Stop someone in the street and ask them to name any horror movie at all, and I suspect a good few will name this one from 1973. It's William Friedkin's The Exorcist.
Your mother's in here with his curse. Would you like to leave a message? I see that she gets it.
If that's true, then you must know my mother's maiden name. What is it?
Yeah, The Exorcist there. Hard to underestimate the fuss this caused at the time. In 1973, people thought of horror films as being a bit of a roller coaster ride, a bit of a fairground attraction containing vampiric aristocrats from the 19th century. And all those Hammer horror films with the slightly too red blood and nothing much to worry about or to concern themselves. And then suddenly along came The Exorcist and transplanted the notion of horror into modern day New England, completely stunning the audience. I think actually at the heart of The Exorcist, there's a haunted house movie. It's the idea of a demon, of something inherently evil, invading the domesticity of a mother and her daughter. And they are trapped by the terror in their house. And in this instance, of course, in the body of the girl herself. But it also, I think, has some very profound things to say about faith and about grief. The horror is, of course, explicit. Almost everybody of a certain age knows that image of the girl Regan tied to a bed and distorted and mutilated by the force that's inside her. But as well as that, that there are other scenes that I think are equally important. Right at the beginning, we see a scene, it's an archaeological dig in the Iraqi desert. And Max von Sydow watches this dig taking place and sees the unveiling of a statue of the demon Pazuzu, which is the demon that eventually goes on to capture Regan, dogs start fighting and the whole scene becomes intense and overwhelming for Max von Sydow. And I think really what we then go on to see is Regan and her mother caught in this crossfire of an eternal battle between the exorcist and Pazuzu. So I think that gives it an extra layer, an extra texture, which people don't always associate with the film The Exorcist. Anyway, Rona, The Exorcist, what do you make of it?
Well, you know, you're talking about, you know, different levels in this film, various stories. There's also the story regarding the other priest and his mother getting sent into the, I think it was a psychiatric hospital. And then there's that other thread of the whole sort of notion of psychiatric illness and little Regan. I hadn't seen this film for years. I'd watched it once years and years ago. And, you know, it was this was, you know, an X-rated film back in, you know, when it was released. I watched this to, you know, refresh my memory and you know, see if it, you know, it would change my long-held sense of bemusement and puzzlement over it. Because, you know, lots of friends over the years have gone, oh, God, The Exorcist, can't watch it. Oh, my God, no. It's terrifying. What are you lot all about? It's, I don't know. I mean, these were all hardly Scottish lads, you know. But, you know, and then I thought, well, maybe it was the religious thing, you know. A couple of friends that I knew that had real problems with it. I thought, well, they were brought up in quite strictly Catholic households. And while they may have abandoned their religion, you know, it was still sort of pulling threads within their psyche. Mm-hmm. But they always claimed, no, that wasn't the case. And I'm like, well, funny looking little girl. A green face tied to bed. And I just, at the time, you just find it, you know, quite amusing. It's like, daft. So I sat myself down and I watched it. Initially, part of my brain's going, okay, this sort of reminds me, in my brain, I've conjured up a version where it's Dave Allen as the priest and it's an episode, a really upsetting episode of The Equalizer or something. But I sat there and I watched it, you know. I'm on board now. It's actually a really good film and it works in so many, there's so many things all woven in together.
Yeah, I'm glad we've brought you round to appreciate The Exorcist. Shall we have film number two from you then?
Yeah, my next film, I think, is the creme de la creme of Hammer Studio releases. I think this is one of the finest British horror films ever made. Not a big budget, but, you know, we all know that budget does not make it a good film. Based on a Dennis Wheatley novel from 1934 and the second in his Duke de Richelieu series, it contains almost everything I need to satisfy my lust for skin-tingling, Crowley-esque Golden Dawn style jiggery pokery. It's essential as it is eerie. Yeah, okay, I do. I fancy Christopher Lee in this film.
Ah, that goes to the nub of it. Mm-hmm, yes,
but,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's only in this film. I don't know. I think I haven't a clue. Let's not even go there. It's as sweet as it is menacing. Fabulous, of course. It's The Devil Rides Out. Wasn't Charles Grey the best disciple of Satan?
I shall not be back. But something will. Tonight. Something will come for Simon and the girl.
Oh, quite, yes. Those icy blue eyes, hasn't he?
Yes. Yes, grey by name and of eye colour.
He was indeed, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Very menacing. I mean, he was also a Bond baddie, wasn't he? He just... Oh, it's a shame to say it, but he looked really evil. He's very scary.
Well, no, I wouldn't balk at that. I'm sure he made a very good living from looking very evil.
Totally. You know, if he could exploit it somehow, yeah, then yeah. Good on him. Oh, it's a great film. I love it. What do you think about it?
I think it's a tremendous film, as you say. Yeah, it just shows that big budgets do not a great horror movie make. And quite the opposite, really. I think, you know, the more money you throw at a horror movie, probably the worse it becomes on the whole. And I do really, again, like this Britishness about the whole deal. I like the idea that in amongst the gentility of the moneyed classes, the upper classes, there can just as equally lurk something revolting and dreadful, and that really they bring that about through their own decadence. I think that's a terrific platform for a good horror movie. So I really, really like this, and it's the climax really of The Devil Rides Out that really makes it stand out perhaps from its contemporaries, because there's a real audacity about the climax when Christopher Lee is tracking down the Satan worshippers and they're to be found out in again those bucolic British woods that would, you know, smell of oak and elm and you know, contain squirrels and hedgehogs and all the things we love. There they are to be found conducting this vile ritual, this obscene ritual. And I think a lesser movie would then have been content with a chase through the woods of the good guys after the bad guys. But what happens here is that the car headlights are suddenly flung on to expose the activities of the devil worshippers. And there, this is what I mean by audacity, there in amongst these cloak-clad evildoers is the devil himself, sitting on a stone altar and overseeing the proceedings. Absolutely astonishing moment.
Oh, I think it's the scariest depiction of Satan in any film I've ever seen.
Yes, quite a traditional pagan drawing of Satan, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. It's very much of the Golden Dawn sort of illustrations and scripts and
yeah,
so on.
Yeah, with the goat's horns and all that. So yeah.
Yes, the horned god. It's
baffling. Yeah, and almost it's almost pan as well, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's almost
it's very primal, yeah. Very, you know, real sort of ancient sort of feel to it. It gives me the creeps.
Yes, the horror inherent in sort of myth and legend and paganism and mysticism is something I can really get on board with. I think that, you know, that really speaks to the British mindset. I think it's great. Yeah, what a wonderful film. Great choice.
It's a very melodramatic film, but oh god, I just love it. It's one of my feel-good films.
You're listening to the 8 horror movies to see before you die with me, Magnus Shaw, and Rona Martin. Now my next selection is a bit controversial. Blair Witch Project.
I'm going upstairs. Hear that? Where is he? Where are you?
From 1999, The Blair Witch Project, which of course uses that now familiar technique of found footage, where in the audience are seeing movie clips, clips that have been taken from a camera abandoned somewhere, rather than actually seeing actors in play before a real camera. Very familiar to anybody who's seen the Paranormal Activity movies. I think there's 4 of those now, but actually quite surprising, something quite new at the time when The Blair Witch Project was released into theatres. We talked about the small budget on Hammer Films, but this was a minuscule budget. $100,000 it took to make The Blair Witch Project. And, you know, I think if you look at a blockbuster at your local multiplex these days, they would have spent more than $100,000 on the catering alone. So this is really remarkable. Of course, it realized multiples of that original $100,000 as it caught on around the world. And as I said, quite surprising to viewers at the time. I think people who don't like The Blair Witch Project fall into 2 groups. There are those who just don't think it's a very good film, quite what they are expecting to see in a really good film, I don't know. And those who really couldn't get through it because of the motion sickness, because almost every scene is brought to us in shaky cam. It's because we're seeing through the camera of the camcorders that the students in the woods are carrying with them. As they try and research the legend of the Blair Witch, which of course becomes all too real for them as this unknowable evil closes in on them in the woods in Burkittsville. And all the monstrosity, this is the astonishing thing, all the monstrosity, all the horror is suggested because we're never allowed to see what the students are seeing. We're never allowed to glimpse what the students are glimpsing, with a very few exceptions. But what film does that's so clever is to make human terror contagious. That is, we get frightened by watching people who are very, very frightened. And that's a very, very clever thing to do. And why I admire this film so much, because they knew they couldn't bring any CGI to play or any kind of monster effects. And so they did something much more special, which was to make fear itself frightening. That's why I've chosen this extraordinary landmark piece of horror cinema, The Blair Witch Project. What say you, Rona Martin?
Well, Magnus. I saw this when it came out in the cinema. Now, this film, if I'm right, was possibly the, or at least one of the earliest examples of viral marketing online. And, you know, just going back to what you're saying about fear being contagious, fear was almost virulent as the marketing campaign, which was fabulous, because I remember one of my friends lived out in the States. She still does. Back then, you would kind of, well, she's sort of had a propensity for emailing me photos of kittens. I'm glad she stopped that. It was, you know, when emails were fun and, you know, you did stuff like that before social networking. But one day she sent me this. She's like, I don't know what this is, but it really freaks me out. And it was what turns out to be an advert for this film. But all it was this kind of apparently fairly rough, realistic footage. I'm like, it can't be real. But it's like, ooh, that's a bit scary. And a bit more, you know, investigation. And, you know, eventually discovered it was some film. So we did see it at the cinema. A few friends, you know, all just got together. And it did freak me out, actually. I was surprised, you know, when you... you know, when we were discussing what films we were going to choose, and, you know, I changed my mind a few times and probably totally nipped your brain in the process. So we went to see this, and I was surprised, you know, when you gave me your list and you said The Blair Witch Project. I thought, seriously? I mean, it had been, what, you said 1999. So that's, what's that, 15 years ago? And I thought, oh, I don't know, somehow I've just completely sort of dismissed more modern horror films. And, you know, I'd kind of forgotten about it and the qualities it possessed. And I thought, oh, what is he on about? You know, The Blair Witch Project, that's about namby-pamby. But anyway, I watched it again, of course, and kept an open mind and got flipping well spooked right out all over again. And you know what? It's, you know, minimal budget. You don't see anything because I think we know their imagination is all running riot as well. And that just makes the whole, you know, primal, visceral reactions just go completely crazy. We're back in caves getting chased by saber-toothed tigers again and everything.
Yes, that's a very good point, actually. That it does. They're suddenly they're dragged out of the modern world into the prehistoric woods. That's a really, really good point. And they're confronted with ancient fears rather than modern anxieties. That's an excellent point. Yeah, indeed.
Thank you. Also, I think this film, now that I think on it, leads on very nicely from the original, can't remember what year version, 1960 something version of The Haunting, starring Claire Bloom and Russ Tamblyn and so on. In which you never see anything. No. It's all down to noise, to sound, and your imagination and the imagination of the inhabitants of this house.
Yes, and it's that notion, is that is anything really happening, or are we just frightened because they're frightened? And that's that's much more unsettling than a bug-eyed monster, isn't it?
I mean, you know, I was watching it this second time round, obviously on a small screen, but seeing it originally in the cinema, your peripheral vision is completely taken up by the
that's
screen.
It yeah
you're sitting right in a dark room. Now, you know, you're primed and ready and totally engaged in this trip through the woods. I love getting spooked out, and, you know, sometimes I wouldn't go in the woods on my own at night. Well, I'd get lost and probably fall in a ditch knowing me. The night we were in the cinema watching it, like one of my friends, we've known each other since we were kind of teenagers, and you damn fine, I was getting really into this, and I was kind of sitting there gnawing my knuckles with huge eyes, and just, it totally made me jump out of my skin because he just sort of reached round and just tickled the back of my neck.
Oh, really?
And yeah, okay. I just froze.
Oh, that's a rotten
yeah,
trick.
Yeah, totally.
No, very much. I'll just give a plea to anybody listening who wants to catch up on the Blair Witch Project. Please don't watch it on your phone or your tablet or your laptop if you can avoid it. At the very least, put it on your big screen telly or a friend's big screen telly. Just see if a small cinema somewhere near you can be persuaded to screen it in a theatre, because that is when you are really enveloped and trapped in the woods with these people. And so from the Blair Witch Project to, well, where next, Rona?
Well, we've treats here. Well, I think so anyway. Mm. Released in 1970 by the often ignored production company Tigon.
Oh, Tigon.
Now, yes, everybody thinks of Hammer as being, you know, the home to British horror, and then maybe Amicus. Tigon, though, they were a quality setup, releasing several great horror films, including The Blood and Satan's Claw, Witchfinder General, and The Curse of the Crimson Altar, which I don't know if anybody and many folk know about, but it's great. I was going to include it, but yeah, that was one of the ones.
It was on an early draft, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I should have, because it's a really cool film.
And I like Witchfinder General a lot.
Yes, great film. Wonderful. And The Blood and Satan's Claw. Fab. Mm. So yeah, Tigon did release some great films. They were maybe ever so slightly edgier than Hammer. Yeah. Hammer were kind of smooth around the edges. Yeah. You know, it was corners were also filed away.
Quite romantic, the Hammer horrors, aren't they? There.
Yeah, so yeah. They're
always there's always a beneath the main plot line. There's always a young man and young lady in love.
Yeah, there's a kind of romantic element quite often. But you know, that's not to say there aren't in other films. But anyway, I have chosen the seriously underrated "The Beast in the Cellar," starring.
Such a good title, isn't it?
Oh, it's a great title. Starring Beryl Reed and Flora Robson.
Who knew those two, those stalwart actresses were in horror films?
Well, Beryl Reed was certainly in, well, at least a couple. She was also in Psychomania as well. It's a pretty nutty film. But
the title would suggest that.
Yes,
I suppose Beryl Reed was so prolific, wasn't she, in her heyday, that she couldn't avoid coming into the horror genre at some point.
And I'm so glad she did. So Beryl and Flora are two elderly sisters who 30 years ago bricked their brother Stephen up in the cellar, as one does.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens.
But that's the second time poor Stephen has been bricked up in the cellar.
He's a really unlucky life, that.
It's a total shame for this guy, because their dad, when he was a baby, their dad took a dislike to him, and then she shoved him down there, but he got out somehow. Poor guy.
Yeah.
So he's been there all this time, or has he? Oh, soldiers are out on military exercises out in the country, and they're being gored to death on... Is it a wildcat escape from the zoo? Or could it be something? Or someone else who has a lust for blood?
Well, let's hear a bit then.
Terror stalks the countryside and holds the community in a grip of fear.
Well, I've never seen anything like this before. Never.
Neither have I, Superintendent.
Human, animal, or animal?
Joyce, he's gone!
What is the sinister secret of the beast in the cellar?
Oh, my God!
I don't know about you, Magnus, but I found it really difficult to nail this down to four films.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to sacrifice So many, yeah. But yeah, I'm really glad I settled on The Beast and the Sailor. It's great fun. I would really, you know, I would watch it again and again.
Again and again, yeah. It's just so quirky. I mean, it would never have come from Hollywood, would it?
Oh, God, no. It is quintessentially British, English. I've never seen it on TV, and it ought to be.
No, I don't think I've ever spotted it. Maybe it's trapped in some copyright hell somewhere.
It's highly possible. Because I've also, it's got to have been about 20 years since I've seen The Curse of the Crimson Altar as well. Yeah. And I recorded it on VHS the last
time. Yeah, of course.
Now, Beast and the Sailor has to be the inspiration behind Edward and Tubbs' son, David, in the League of Gentlemen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've mentioned the League of Gentlemen earlier.
That's another one.
Started to spot those influences quite
quickly. So anybody watching this for the first time, I will personally come and pin a spotter's badge onto your lapel if you spot Eric Pollard from Emmerdale Farm in a very brief appearance.
And this is really another thoroughly explored horror trope, isn't it? The bad thing locked in the attic, or in this case, the cellar. There's a few movies that seize on that.
Yeah, it's a really good plot device, isn't it?
One called The Ghoul, a mid-period Hammer one called The Ghoul, where a guy brings a ghoul back from India, and I think it's Peter Cushing brings back a ghoul from India.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, a cool friend indeed, and locks it in the top room, and it played by Don Henderson. You might remember from a detective show called Bullman, and a great Shakespearean actor as well. Don Henderson, my dad knew him, but that's another story. And yeah, he plays the ghoul. It's all a bit limp. I think Hammer made the ghoul with whatever budget was left over from Satanic Rites of Dracula, because there's not much to it. That's another thing in the attic movie. And I just always wonder whether this isn't all rooted in Jane Eyre. Mr. Rochester's first wife in Jane Eyre is locked in, on the top floor, isn't she? And she's screaming mad. Yeah, that's right. And people are welcome to write, email or tweet us and tell us about an earlier reference to a thing locked in the attic. But that's the earliest I can think of. There's the gothic romantic Bronte novels and Mrs. Rochester in the attic. Please do get in touch with us if any of this is chiming with you, or you want to ask any questions or give us suggestions of horror films we may not have seen or heard of or should have included. At Rocking Vicar, no definite article, and all the usual places, and the site, of course, therockingvicar.com. Well, you're listening to the 8 horror movies that you must watch before you die with Magnus Shaw and Rona Martin. And before I reveal my third choice, Rona, let me just ask you, what do you think makes a bad horror movie?
There's so many. More films disappoint me than thrill me or terrify me. I think a big budget is almost guaranteed to
a big budget
movie. As far as I'm concerned, it does nothing. I'm not into CGI. I think that's awful.
Well, a small budget it demands more initiative and imagination and more of an effort. Yeah, you have to be more innovative with a smaller budget, and that, I guess, inevitably produces a better movie. I mean, it's not a hard and fast rule with some low budget horror that just doesn't make the grade. But I do take that point that the more money you've got to spend, the more time you are likely to put into just toying around with bug-eyed monsters on a computer screen than actually creating any kind of atmosphere or anything very compelling. So yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
I think also, we have sort of discussed there are many avenues within the horror genre. And in fact, I've said it before, there are many films which don't even belong to the horror genre, which terrify me far more and far more profoundly than most horror films, particularly David Lynch's films, which they're not horror films, but I defy anybody to not get super freaks out by most of the stuff.
Well, let me dispel any thought of bad horror movies with my next selection and see how this charms you. Number three, and it's a rare but completely compelling combination of both science fiction and horror. One out of the Hammer stable again. It's from 1967. It's Quatermass and the Pit.
Hobbs Lane.
They've changed the spelling. New ones like Hobbs the Cricketer.
The old one. Hobbs was once a sort of nickname for the devil.
Ah, wonderful. Wonderful. Now, Quatermass and the Pit was actually remade from a 1958 series of the tremendous Quatermass TV show. Even I'm too young to remember the original Quatermass TV show going out. But it was a sort of earthbound precursor to Doctor Who in many ways. Professor Quatermass is an austere government scientist, and he's called in when events become, well, a bit too supernatural for the regular fellows. This movie is directed by Roy Ward Baker. Stars Andrew Keir in the title role. And I often wonder whether this stupendous screenplay wasn't arrived at by sheer chance. The reason I say that is that it's just so superior in concept and realisation when compared with many of its contemporaries. It didn't have extra budget, and it didn't come out of a bigger studio or anything. It's just head and shoulders above many of the other creature feature or science fiction that accompanied it. So it's just possible that they looked into this tremendous movie, but tremendous it surely is. Cleverly combines demonology, religion, space travel, and the London Underground. And if that sounds like it's going to be completely daft, it really isn't. It manages to hold all those elements together in a tightly bound but ever mysterious idea that unravels for you as the protagonist, your Professor Quatermass and his colleagues start to understand what is happening. And I'm not going to give too much away because I think it's quite underseen, this movie, and I don't want to explain too much. Being Hammer, of course, there's a very British feel to it all. There's the presence of the army, bringing to mind the Pertwee-era Doctor Who episodes. Nevertheless, the reveal and dramatic climax are every bit as good as anything Hollywood was doing at the time. Probably much, much better, in fact. It's a remarkable film. Leaves you with rather profound questions burning in your mind long after you've seen it. I can't recommend it highly enough. But Rona, what did you make of Quatermass?
I had seen the TV series, not at the time, of course. I'm still young. But they'd obviously, I think BBC Two probably had sort of re-shown it. It's only within the last 20 years, because I distinctly remember having a conversation with my one of my uncles one day, and he got utterly thrilled when discussing Quatermass and the Pit, because it was the first TV series he ever watched on television back in the late 50s.
Well, TV had only been back on for about 4 years after the war, hadn't it? Was it 1954?
I have no idea, and it's certainly rural Scotland. I'm sure it was a bit later than that.
yeah, I think it probably was.
To afford a television, you know, a bit of a luxury, you know.
Oh yes, I mean that was a different matter, wasn't it? But I think they started to retransmit television programmes in about 1954, around then.
So, watching that and then just thinking back, well, that was the late 50s. What a fantastically exciting concept to have on TV back then.
Especially when TV itself, just the technology was exciting before you even watched anything.
I watch it, and I watch the film from the 60s, and it really does feel like a precursor to Doctor Who, doesn't it?
Very much now, so, yeah.
Even the name Quatermass really gives me the creeps.
It's what a brilliant name.
Long before they'd ever seen the film or, the TV series, when I was really young, obviously getting into all my spooky films, even the title Quatermass and the Pit, a real tingle up my shoulder blades. It's a good film. It's personally, it's not one of my favourites, but I do enjoy the whole plot. You know, like, well, better be careful not to give it away, but...
Yeah, I think this is one of these films where you can't explain too much, because it's the explanatory nature of the film that makes it so interesting. Yeah, but the concept is really original, isn't it? The idea of what is going on and what is revealed to be going on, I think, is incredibly inventive. I love the context, but so much like Pertwee,
very
era
much
Doctor
so.
Who,
I think we've many times, you know, agreed that was probably the most successful era of Doctor Who. Certainly the only era that I've ever enjoyed. And tries am I,
yes,
you know, to
yeah,
keep going, because
yeah.
I wasn't allowed to watch that when I was little, but probably not because it would corrupt me, but more my parents were like, my God, this is so rubbish.
Probably worth watching the black and white original TV series. I'm sure you can find it online, and then watch the movie version. Two different Quatermasters. We've got Nigel Neal and Andrew Keir playing the title role in the TV series, and then in the movie. But worth watching them both and seeing what you're making. So they both have their own inherent appeal. But much to my surprise, Rona, we're at your ultimate destination. So would you be so good as to name your fourth movie?
Old ladies who are handy with a power drill and have a taste for human flesh. We've all encountered one at some you know, and some of us may even be related to one, but prefer not to mention us in polite company. I encourage you all to seek out my final choice, Frightmare. Starring Sheila Keith, the one-time star of Crossroads, I think from the late 60s, best known to many of us as the leading lady in many Pete Walker films, and the very embodiment of menace. Apparently accidentally born in London, but she is of Scottish parentage and brought up in Scotland. But
all right.
The embodiment of menace, playing parts including a one-eyed housekeeper, a lesbian prison warden, and in this film, an elderly cannibal.
And this was very much the brief for the British actor in that era, wasn't it? Is that you had to turn your hand to anything and everything, because a theatre...
Whatever pays the bills.
Well, yeah, and theatre was still enormously popular. So a lot of these actors were appearing in movies, appearing on telly, and appearing either in repertory theatre or touring theatre at the same time. And certainly, I mean, I grew up in a theatrical family, and certainly they saw movies and TV as very much the poor relation to stage performance.
Yeah, very much so. But just think of all the different types of audience they were reaching out to.
Yeah, quite.
You know, I mean, Sheila Keith, she was famed for, you know, her TV sort of soap appearances, but also this very edgy early 70s sort of cult cinema audience as well, that were, you know, no doubt it was all shown in little independent cinemas and CD streets and so on. Her final TV role was a tribute to her character in Frightmare.
Swords, 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 swords. It's all strife, isn't it? Strife and heartache and loneliness. Not a lot of friends.
None at all to speak of.
No. No close family ties.
Ah, excellent. Well, Frightmare makes me think of just... And this is something that crops up in many a horror film, actually. The idea of making old ladies very scary. I think there's a good chance if you sat down and watched a horror film tonight, you'd find at some point they used a scary old lady. As we mentioned in the Blair Witch Project, that before they go into the woods, they encounter a scary old lady. That's quite a common theme, isn't it?
Yes, it seems to be, and rightly so. I remember being utterly terrified of having to visit my great auntie when I was little, but she really was scary, Auntie Mary.
And this, I think, goes back to traditional folk tales where there's a wise woman, and wise in that context didn't necessarily mean knowledgeable. It meant in touch with other forces, didn't it? And that goes back way into medieval storytelling, doesn't it? I am bitterly disappointed, but it is time for my fourth choice, which is actually a remake. It's not a sequel, but a recreation of a silent movie classic and cinema's first telling of the Dracula story, released in 1979 and directed quite brilliantly by Werner Herzog. This is Nosferatu the Vampire.
Innkeeper, quick, my supper. I have to go to the castle tonight.
Which one?
Count Dracula's.
Must you go there, really?
Yes. Why?
At midnight, all sorts of evil spirits are set loose.
Oh, what a movie. What an experience. The sickness and pallid misery just drips from every frame of Nosferatu. The original monochrome is barely replaced. There's just a hint of washed out colour. The magnificent Klaus Kinski plays the shaven-headed, bat-eared vampire. Not as a rampaging monster, but not even like Christopher Lee, who was, of course, the alluring, savage Lothario. But Klaus Kinski is a creature eaten up by the disease of vampirism, which is captured his entire being. He's hollow and rueful, sad and ravaged. If you like a lot of pathos in your horror, this is the place to be. And incredibly, Herzog finds some kind of haunted beauty in the despair and waste of the world he paints. It's a world so burdened with curse that everything is slow and silent and the atmosphere is aching, and that ache is almost tangible. I can't tell you how much I admire this film. The unearthly art direction and spare performances just border on genius throughout the duration. Even Francis Ford Coppola couldn't come up with something close to the tragic majesty of this version of Dracula.
I totally agree. In fact, I find it very difficult to add anything to what you've just said. It's an astonishing film. Now, oddly, I hadn't seen this film until recently, and I just don't understand why, because I seem to remember one of my friends way back when we were some mid-teens going on incessantly about Klaus Kinski and this Werner Herzog film. It just grabs and clings to your skin and pulls you down into this a beautiful kind of misery. This almost feel somewhat sad and compassionate towards the Klaus Kinski vampire. He's cursed. He is a complete slave to the symptoms of vampirism.
Yes, he's so consumed by, and in this setting, vampirism is totally a disease, and he's so consumed by the disease that he's pathetic, isn't he?
Yes, pathetic.
It's eating him alive. As he eats other people alive, the disease is eating him alive. It's extraordinary. There's a scene that always jumps to mind when I'm discussing this version of Nosferatu, is when the ship, which is bringing the coffins from Transylvania to, in this case, to Holland, the ship drifts into the harbour of Rotterdam, and it's silent and misty, and you're just hypnotised by this scene. It's an incredible piece of cinema.
I totally agree. Definitely, everybody go for it. It's classy. It's a classy horror film.
Very classy. Yeah.
Complete. Complete contrast to my choices. This is this is very intelligent. Not this is dismissing
art,
the others.
Art house
this
horror.
This is art house horror.
There's nothing wrong with art house horror.
Not at all. This is a wonderful example, and yeah. Just see it,
Yeah, it is beautiful. It's a very beautiful film, and I think in direct contrast with as I mentioned, that Coppola's in fact incredibly flawed telling of the Dracula story. This is the definitive non-Christopher Lee, non-Bela Lugosi Dracula. I think.
Yeah, I think it shows a greater and deeper understanding of the original Dracula novel.
We should just mention that the English version is is overdubbed from the German. But don't let that put you off, because it's one of the best lip syncing overdubs you will ever see in your life. You're not aware of it being an overdubbed script.
Yeah, I thought at first, because I watched it in German with English subtitles.
Yeah, that's also a good way to see it.
The German
tongue is so lends itself to this story.
Absolutely, and the countryside. It wasn't a stage lot at Shepperton or whatever. I did also see the overdubbed version. And you know, I said to you, did he make this film twice? Because it is that well overdubbed. Yeah, it's something I've ever seen a good example of.
It's very good indeed. Well, I think we have reached the terminus, it's very sad to say. So may I just thank you, Rona, for your wisdom and insights. You've been absolutely brilliant. And you've brought so much to this little project. So we're very, very grateful. Your knowledge and love of horror pictures is clearly boundless.
Well, thank you for having me. I could talk about horror films till the bats come home to roost.
In the spirit of Desert Island Discs, if you could keep just one of your selections and jettison the rest, which movie are you going for?
Out of these four, right, a toss up between The Beast in the Cellar and Frightmare. I wonder, what could I go with? I'll go for The Beast in the Cellar because of Beryl Reid.
What better reason could there be to choose a movie than the fact that it features Beryl Reid? Very good. So Rona's a singular choice out of her four, The Beast in the Cellar.
What about you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I can't dodge that, can I? Oh, man, it's so hard, isn't it? Okay, for sheer idiosyncratic perfection and uniqueness, it would have to be Nosferatu, which we just discussed. It is just an extraordinary piece of cinema. We must say farewell. If you have not been paying attention, let me just recap for you. The eight horror movies you must see before you die are The Witches, The Exorcist, The Devil Rides Out, The Blair Witch Project, The Beast in the Cellar, Quatermass in the Pit, Frightmare, and Nosferatu the Vampire. I'm Magnus Shaw, she's Rona Martin, and this has been a Dacom Shaw media production for The Rocking Vicar. And please, don't have nightmares.